Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Scott Larson is the North and South Dakota Field Supervisor, Ecological Services for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. He joins us now from Pier for a look ahead at Endangered Species Day in South Dakota. Scott Larson, welcome to In the Moment.
Hi, Carrie. Thank you for having me.
Let's go back to the history a little bit of Endangered Species Day. How long has it been sort of in effect in the state?
Well, that came on about 20 years ago, but the act itself has been in place for 44 years. And the Black Hills Audubon Group, Prairie Hills Audubon, has been holding or hosting an event for at least a couple decades, I believe. And they're gracious enough to offer us a chance to come out and talk about the species here in South Dakota that are listed. And this year, we're also going to talk about those that we've been requested to review to see if they do warrant listing in the future.
Give me an idea of the day itself and the kind of events that people will look forward to. Who's the audience as well?
Well, the date of the event is Friday, this Friday, and it's in the evening, and I think the talks will start about 6:30, but there's a chance to get there early and have some snacks and refreshments and meet folks and see some of that type of activity. And after that, then there'll be two speakers, myself and another person, and I'll be speaking on endangered species in South Dakota, and I think the other person will give an overview of their perspective of things happening in Washington.
All right, so let's start right here in South Dakota, and what sort of endangered species do we have?
Well, there's about 1,650 listed species across the U.S., but in South Dakota there's 15 or 16 that we can find semi-regularly. Some are migrants, some are here all the time, and some just wander into the state occasionally. So South Dakota has some really good endangered species habitat for certain ones, like black-footed ferrets, least terns, piping plovers. Every year we'll see whooping cranes go north and south on their annual migration. So we do have some really good key habitats for endangered species in the state.
Do we have, critters who are supposed to be here but whose habitats are at risk and we're losing?
We do have some of those. So there's a couple. The Dakota skipper is a butterfly, so we've still got pretty good populations of those here. But in places further east in the range, say Iowa and Minnesota, they're quite a bit tougher shape over there. The Topeka shiner is a small minnow in some of the eastern South Dakota streams, and that seems to be holding its own there, even though it's in tougher shape in other areas.
What's that one called, the minnow?
The Topeka shiner.
Okay. Well, describe one of these to me. What's the Dakota skipper butterfly look like? Can you tell me?
Well, it's a kind of an obscure small skipper, and it's got a really short flight period, so maybe 2 weeks to 3 weeks, and it comes up typically starting in late June, has a short flight period, and finds the opposite gender and breeds and lays eggs all in that short time period. And the rest of the time, those eggs are hatching, turn into larvae, and that cycle goes for about a year, and they're an annual species, so they have basically one crack. They need the right conditions. Everything comes together, and it's important to have those native prairies still on the landscape, along with those key forbs that they key in on, things like purple coneflower and that.
How do I know if I've seen one?
Well, you might not, because it takes a kind of a keen eye. A lot of the lepidopterists will need to look closely at those to tell them from some of the other skippers, so a novice like myself really doesn't stand much chance on those. But
sure.
It takes someone with a lot of experience, typically.
All right, so tell me how important those the grasslands and the native prairies are in the state for some of these animals.
Well, a couple of them, like Dakota skipper and Powsheep skipperling, that's the only type of areas we've ever found them on. We haven't been able to find them in areas, even when we've replanted grass and replanted what we thought was the right species of grass. So those native prairies and the forbs that are in those prairies are absolutely key to some of the species. We know that there is also a wide variety of grassland nesting birds and other critters that key into those native prairies as well. There's a lot of our native wildlife are tied very close to the native prairies. They're just a treasure still left in the state here.
And what's the status of that? Are we losing our native prairies? Are we, like you said, maybe restoring or reclaiming some of that space?
Well, all of the above. So there is still loss going on, as you can imagine. We really went through a rough period a few years ago where quite a bit of more was getting broke out every year. We know through our CRP programs and that we're putting some grass back on the landscape, trying to get a good native component in there with forbs, and a lot of the federal agencies are working hard to do good things, but there is also those other pressures that are still breaking out in native prairie as well.
Tell me about some of those challenges or pressures.
Well, the economics will tend to drive a lot of that. So as folks might want to grow crops instead of raise cattle, that it can come down to something as simple as that. So livestock and ranching endeavors can be really valuable to those native wildlife species that need native grass.
So is that something that you're in conversation with ranchers, farmers, landowners, policymakers? Is that something you engage in?
We are. So as an agency, we have a lot of folks and try to put forth a lot of effort working closely with ranchers so that they can, you know, maintain a profitability and keep that grass on the landscape. That's really important.
And are you getting good feedback regarding that? Is that something that they want to do, but then there's a challenge of, as you said, the economics behind it?
Well, there's always challenges, but there is a lot of interest in that as well. We're really fortunate in that respect to have some really conscientious ranchers that want to keep that grass in grass and pass that heritage, pass that way of life down to the next generation.
If you're just tuning in, my guest, Scott Larson, North and South Dakota Field Supervisor for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And Scott, I'm wondering, you know, how are these things measured? How are we counting? How often are biologists or others, volunteers out in the field looking to sort of see, you know, where our endangered species are and whether their numbers are going up or going down?
Well, as you can imagine, it's very specific to the critter. So when we think about these terns and piping plovers, there are a couple of those shore birds nesting along the Missouri River, either along the shoreline of the reservoirs or on barren islands right in the reservoir, and those tend to get counted every year. We've got a few ferret reintroduction sites and try to count those critters in the fall, kind of after the females and their kits have started coming above ground, but before they disperse. So there's kind of a sweet spot there in September to try to do surveys for those. Whooping cranes, we do a lot of that just by, you know, observers that might see them, and we've got a mechanism set up so they can report sightings. And also on whooping cranes, we've got a more sophisticated way of counting them once they arrive on their wintering grounds down south, so we can get a pretty good accurate count. But some of those observer reports we see coming down the flyway, because those birds are traveling a long ways, 2,000, 2,200 miles in some case. We can kind of, as those observer reports can come in, we can see how that grouping of whooping cranes is going down the flyway. So each one of those listed species kind of has a different technique and mechanism and timing for surveys, if you will.
Tell me where the ferret reintroduction site is. What part of the state are we talking about there?
Well, they're all West River, so
okay.
We've got a site at what's called Kanata Basin on Forest Service ground just south of Wall, and Badlands National Park is also a reintroduction site. Wind Cave National Park is one as well, and then three Indian reservations have also participated, the Cheyenne River Sioux, Rosebud, and Lower Brule Sioux. So they've all had really good luck at various times. We've had some challenges with ferrets, too, coming in with things like Sylvatic plague has come in and hit prairie dogs hard and also hit ferrets hard, too, where it has occurred. So endangered species, there's challenges there no matter which one you're working with.
Are you hopeful for the future, Scott? Are there things that sort of make you optimistic?
There are. So We have some really good partners that we work with, both through the state and individual landowners and tribes. There is keen interest there on holding on to our natural heritage, and we're really fortunate in that respect.
Scott Larson, North and South Dakota Field Supervisor, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Endangered Species Day celebration is the Rapid City School Administration Building in Rapid. That's on 6th Street in the community room. Use the southeast entrance, and you can get meet and greet and snacks at 6:15. The speech is at 6:30. That's Friday, May 19th. Scott Larson, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.